Hey, my name is Jason. I'm the producer of It Starts With Attraction. I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website solely dedicated to working on your pies. Introducing itstartswithattraction.com. You can listen to every episode, learn about the pies, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Go to itstartswithattraction.com. It starts with attraction, one word, itstartswithattraction.com to get signed up today.
Warning, this episode may be a little controversial, but I believe that it's a true and real and good and honest conversation that needs to occur and that we probably need to have more of. In today's episode, I'm sitting down with Dr. Joe Beam, who is also my dad. Dr. Joe Beam has his PhD in social sciences from the University of Sydney, and that doesn't really matter for today's conversation. What really matters is that he, I believe, and I know I'm a biased person, but he's a very wise person who has experienced a lot in life and has seen a lot of things change in our culture. And so in today's episode, I'm sitting down with him and asking him about the changes that he has seen over the decades. I mean, from him remembering when segregation was still happening to the wars that have happened to, I mean, all the way from the 60s to today, we're getting his viewpoint on what has changed in culture and some commentary from him on what he foresees is going to be happening in the future and some warnings about how he's very concerned about the future of our generation. And a lot of that concern stems from the fact that we aren't having conversations like this on a wider scope. In fact, typically, when people have conversations like this, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of controversy, there's a lot of just splitting down the middle and not truly listening to people who are on the other side. And that is one of the things that I hope to overcome in not just this podcast specifically, but the whole It Starts With Attraction show. I love having on guests who may not have the same belief system that I do, but understanding how they see the world and then taking the golden nuggets of wisdom from the things that they share, finding the common ground, and then relating it back to truth. That's one of the things I love to do, and it's part of our spiritual area of attraction. So in today's episode, we're going to touch on physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual parts of culture and how we need to be aware of how each of those things have changed over the decades and warnings for how they may change in the future if we're not careful. Without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Dad, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, Kimberly, always good to be with you.
Yes. And in thinking about this podcast. Mm-hmm. The goal of this podcast is to help people become the best that they can, physical, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, as you know, the pies.
I've heard of that.
You've heard of it. Yeah. Concept you created a while ago.
Wow. 20 or 30 years ago. Yeah.
Yes. And there's several different areas of life that these aspects interact with in our lives. And one of them is culture and how culture can shape us and affect how attractive, if you want to say it that way, or how we show up physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. And so I would love to discuss, what are some shifts that you have seen either in your life? Because you've been through a wealth of situations. You remember when there was segregation.
You know, that's a nice way of saying you're really old, Dad.
You are full of wisdom and discernment.
Yeah, right.
But there's so many other cultures that value the wisdom of those that are older. Mm-hmm. And our culture doesn't do as good of a job at that.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. So I would love to hear, like, what shifts have you seen in culture as you've gone through the years? And what are the shifts that you foresee coming in culture that you think that we should be aware of?
Actually, I can speak to that in each of the P-I-E-S, but I think I would start with the emotional.
Okay.
When I was younger, the culture of America, now obviously I wasn't traveling the world at 6 years old, but when I was younger, the culture of America was that you took care of people, you lived up to responsibility. And even if your emotions were, I want to go this, I want to do that, you would live up to your responsibility instead. And so if your parents were getting older and you could care for them, they moved into your house. If you were married and you began to have some kind of discord or troubles, you figured out how to fix it. Because it was like, I have responsibility to you, you to me. We have responsibilities to our children, to our neighbors, to our relatives. And therefore, it's not all about me. Mm-hmm. It's about what I need to do that's the right thing to do for people. And if my emotions go against that, I will push my emotions down because my responsibility is more important. That began to change back in the 1960s. Now, a long time before you were born, when it began to be more about freedom. And freedom, I'm all for. I mean, our whole country stands for freedom. But it was more than just freedom in the sense of citizenship and those kinds of things. But it became freedom to do whatever I want to do. And you don't have any right to judge me, which got even worse in the 70s and 80s. And to the point now where that even marriage counselors tell people, oh, you don't need to fix this marriage. Yeah, you're better off if you just split up. And no, don't think about the children. They'll be fine. Whereas you and I both know, what was that thing we were talking about just a minute ago, the ACE?
ACEs, yeah, Adverse Childhood Experiences Scale.
Mm-hmm. And what does it indicate?
It's about 11 or 12 questions that indicate the level of trauma that a child went through that is going to negatively, adversely affect them as they get older into life.
Mm-hmm. And one of them asked about if a parent died before they turned 18 years old.
Mm-hmm. Or was incarcerated. That's another
incarcerated
one.
Incarcerated is another one. Or if you're... mother and father divorced before you were 18 years old.
Yeah.
And these are seen as traumatic events that will affect not just the way you think, feel, it'll actually affect your health. Mm-hmm. And so very high scores, like if you were to get a 9, and I realize most people don't know what those scores mean right now, but let's just understand that 9 would be very high. There's like 11 questions. Each one that you say yes to gets 1 point.
Right.
So a 9 would be extremely high. Then they indicate that if you have a score that high, which is kind of rare, that you are almost certainly going to be having great physical problems.
Yeah, you're right. I had forgotten about that till you said it. But yes, there's a much higher, just overall, all cause mortality rate, but especially cardiovascular disease is way more prevalent the higher your ACEs score is because of stress. The stress that the body took on during that time that it remembers in a way.
And so what I was reading, I was just looking at some of that research yesterday. Mm-hmm. A score of above 4 indicates there's a great likelihood that you're going to have physical problems because of the stress that you endured in childhood. And if you get up to 6, 7, 8, even the 9, it's like it's a given. You're going to be having all kinds of problems in various ways, including physically. Mm-hmm. And so we see that even the research says, no, there still should be some responsibility.
Yeah.
That if you bring children onto this planet, for example, and then you divorce, you will negatively... you'll have an adverse reaction to the child that the child may pay for years later, not just in terms of them being more likely to divorce themselves, more likely to not trust that some people are going to stay there for them, but also in terms of their physical health.
Yeah.
And so that's emotional. I've seen that change from a culture of, yes, what I want is important, but doing what's right is more important, to... now it's all about me, and whatever makes me happy is none of your business. And if you don't like it, you can lump it. As a matter of fact, you actually should now endorse and agree with and encourage me to be irresponsible if my emotions are leading me in some other direction. And if you don't back my emotions, my personalized, to some degree, selfish emotions, then you're the bad guy now. All the way from it's bad to not do the right thing, even when your emotions are saying you want to do something else, all the way to flip to the other side of where it's bad if you think I don't have the right to do whatever I want to do, whenever I want to do it. And who cares who it hurts? It's all about me. It's a worship of self.
Why do you think the change began to happen in the 60s?
Well, in the 60s, we were coming out of Vietnam. Actually, we were getting into Vietnam, let's say it differently. We started in the late 50s into Vietnam. And so we were getting, it was the first war that was on TV.
Mm.
And so we were getting pictures of battles and things like that on our evening news. It was in black and white to begin with, but we were seeing that. And then we'd see pictures or photos or even movies of the caskets being taken off the airplanes with the American flags draped over them. Mm. And then we'd learn about some of the terrible things that they did over there, not just our guys, some of which did terrible things, but the terrible things that were being done by the Vietnamese people. And folks just generally got to the point of thinking, what are we doing? Mm. It's an unpopular, unhappy war. We need to rebel. And therefore, our rebellion is going to be, we're going to tune in and drop out. It's not that tune in, it was another phrase. I can't remember exactly what it was, but back in the 60s, which basically said, I'm going to drop it in and then tune out, which means I'm going to take the drugs where I don't have to, like LSD, those kinds of things. And so it began changing in the 60s because people did not like the reality we had. And admittedly, our government was lying to us. We know that now. And so a lot of disillusionment. But it moved from, okay, these people are doing wrong, let's fix it, to, look, just whatever I think should be the right thing. And then as we went into the 70s, it got stronger doing that.
So that's when the hippie movement.
In the 60s, actually.
In the late, mid to late 60s. Mm-hmm. And it was just paired with Vietnam, the rebellion.
Mm-hmm. And the rebellious songs, like Canned Heat did a song about going up country, which was all about being in Vietnam. And there were other songs, protest songs about Vietnam. Now, I'm not trying to encourage Vietnam. And if anybody here is watching or listening to us who served in Vietnam or had somebody you love who served in Vietnam, our folks did the best they could. I am very much in support of our troops. Not so much in support of some of the political leaders that made decisions back in those days. Yeah. But yeah, the world began to change. It's like, they're going to get me killed. Why should I die for them? Who cares about this thing they're calling responsibility? I've got to be me. Mm. And they even, who was it? Was it Paul Anka that wrote that song? Somebody, I got to be me.
Mm. Where did free love fit into this?
Well, when you start throwing off the boundaries, once you cross a boundary, crossing other boundaries becomes very easy. We know that, for example, when we deal with marriages where an infidelity is taking place, that a person who's committing infidelity will do some sexual acts with that partner that they never did with their spouse. And the spouse, if they find out about it, is like, boy, he did that with her or she did that with him, never did it with me. Why are they doing that? Because once you cross that boundary, all the boundaries begin to fall. Mm-hmm. And so when they were crossing the boundaries, burning their draft cards for the guys, burning their brassieres for the girls, not wanting to be responsible. I'm going to change the way I dress. I'm going to change the way I act. I'm going to let you know that I'm not part of your society. And that was when it started. Now, am I blaming those folks for where we are today? No. No, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying it seems to me that's where the change began.
Mm. What about the good things that happened from that time, like the ending of segregation? I mean, because what was the timeline of those?
Well, the first African-Americans that went to school with me were in high school. Mm. When I was in grammar school, for example, people who were had darker skin tones than mine could work in our kitchens, they could work in our halls, but they couldn't sit in our classrooms. Mm. And there was a lot of animosity. And each side had terrible words they would call the other. White people called black people one thing. Black people called white people another thing. And there was a lot of animosity. Mm-hmm. So when the integration first started, when it first began to be legal, a lot of animosity, people being killed, all those kinds of things. When I was a student in high school, this is how long ago this was, students drove the school buses. So I drove a school bus my 11th and 12th grade of high school, and three African-American young ladies rode my bus, and they would not speak to me. Mm-hmm. I tried my best to be friendly, to be warm, and I'm sure it's because they were afraid, afraid of me protecting themselves as best they could be. So it really was bad, very bad, but it's still bad. Mm. It's a lot better than it was. The man who was affecting the most change was Martin Luther King Jr. Now, not a perfect man by any means, but a really good man, in my opinion, who was accomplishing a great deal of good. And his whole mantra was nonviolent disobedience. Mm. We're going to do civil disobedience so the government has to change the laws. If this restaurant says blacks can't eat here, we're going to go sit there at the counter. But we're never going to be violent because violence just breeds more violence. Whoever it was that was involved in killing him, now I know that one man was put in prison for it, but it seems like maybe it was broader. maybe. I don't know what they were thinking. Yes, he's for integration, but he's preaching nonviolence.
Yeah.
After he died, the great influence he had began to fade, and look how many things turned to violence, like the Watts riots, for example. Even some of the riots that we see today that somehow seem to be racially divided, and a lot of violence out there from blacks toward blacks toward whites. I mean, and not just that, but now the other ethnicities are getting involved. The Asians, for example, and the Latinos and so forth and so on. And so you look at that and go, it's become a world where we have better rules for integration, but a much more violent world. Much more violent world than it was. Much.
What do you think could change it?
If this thing called love, you know, it's also part of the hippie movement, as you call it, a few minutes ago, the free love movement of the 60s. It was really about love. If you're going to San Francisco, wear some flowers in your hair. It was all about being kind and nice and helping people out. And if ever we could get back to that again, which basically comes down to, rather than following my baser emotions, which are all about me, allowing myself to be more influenced by my higher emotions, which has to do with helping people who need help, caring for people who can't care for themselves, giving to people who don't have enough, all those kinds of things, and listening to people, even when I don't think I will agree with anything that they say. Mm-hmm. Back when Reagan was president, were you alive when Reagan was president?
I think that was the year I was born.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Back, he and Tip O'Neill, a very strong leader in the Democratic Party, Reagan in the Republican Party, at odds with each other on many issues, would often meet in the evening and have a cocktail and just visit with each other, just enjoyed each other's company. Therefore, at least you were listening to the other side. And, yeah. and in that kind of a situation, you can eventually work things out, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Who's listening to whom now?
Mm-mm.
Nobody.
No.
Nobody.
It's so divided. Rob and I were talking about this last night. He was talking about some study that was done. I guess there were four groups of people. And so there was and they were split into two different groups of Democrats and two different groups of Republicans. So one group of Democrats and one group of Republicans took this survey of their beliefs on certain political issues. So that was their control group. Then the other groups were told to think about being the other. So the Democrats, they said, think that you are a Republican, now fill this out. And then same with Republicans, think that you're. And so this was probably done several years ago too. But when we were talking about it, Rob said, and it was the Republicans actually closely mirrored when they were told to think of how liberals think. But when the Democrats were asked to, those compared to the Republican control group was way off. So as we were talking about this, I said, okay, well, here's the thing. Like, some people may hear that and say,
see, the other Republicans are better people.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or, well, that's because Democrats are stupid. I'm not saying that.
No. But but people could use
that's
that
what people,
to
right.
make those interpretations.
So,
yes.
So the first words out of my mouth were, well, it's not because Democrats aren't smart.
Exactly.
That's not why. So why is it different? Or was it different back then? It was probably 5 or 10 years ago at this point. Why could it have been different? And then the question I asked to him has there ever been a time where the Democrats have felt like their voice was silenced? And we kind of talked about like Lyndon B. Johnson. Like, we went through and kind of talked about some different things. But, and I don't know that we came to a conclusion, but are they feeling like they weren't heard? And so it's hard for them to understand the other side because they just want to be heard right now or then when it happened. And of course, I don't know the answer, but I think that the split in politics currently, and as we've seen it over the past several years, is scary.
Mm-hmm. Because it filters down to every aspect of our society.
Absolutely. How do we get to the place where we can see the other person's perspective and understand it, even when we don't agree with it?
Yeah. And we teach people all the time to respect another person is to give them value. mm-hmm. that you're valuable because you are a human being. And therefore, I will listen to what you say. I'll try to understand it. I'm not going to be debating it, throwing it back at you. I'm really going to try to understand what you say. Now, I'll accept the fact that you think, feel, or believe that way. I won't endorse it if I don't agree with it. I certainly won't encourage it if I don't agree with it. But at least you feel heard. And so that's when we get into the intellectual of the pies, Kimberly. When I was younger, the people who really wanted society to change for the better were the ones saying, let's talk about everything. Mm. Let's explore new ideas. Let's bring speakers into college campuses who can challenge us by presenting things we've never thought about before. Mm. We may not change one iota because of what they say, but it's going to teach us how to think, how to process, how to reason, how to deduce, those kinds of things. And it was the conservative people when I was in college who were doing everything they could to keep the liberal, as they would phrase it, the liberal people, from coming on campus and giving their views. Mm. Now that's flipped just the opposite. Mm. And it's the people who are considered to be the, quote, liberal people, end quote, who are now protesting and demanding that the ones with the conservative views not be able to come on their campus. And mm-hmm. so we were trying to encourage free thought, mm-hmm. not freedom from thought, not freedom from law, not freedom from reasoning. Mm-hmm. But let's keep exploring. And that's how our scientists were making some of the most amazing discoveries, because science was always based on, that's what appears to be true right now. But maybe it's different. Maybe there's something we haven't seen. Maybe there's some action that hasn't taken place. And so great things like penicillin being discovered mm-hmm. from mold on bread, of all places, and the polio vaccine that really changed the world when I was a young man, the smallpox vaccine, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I know we're still making inventions like that now, but we don't, I say we, many places in America do no longer encourage people to think freely and widely. Our intellect has changed to, this is what's right. And if anybody says anything different than that, they're a heretic of some side. Mm-hmm. So either on the liberal side, conservative side. I miss the days when I could sit with a friend and we had such varying views that we could discuss all evening and never get mad. Mm-hmm. Maybe not find a point of agreement. Maybe wind up finding 5 or 6 points of agreement. But both of us learning and thinking. Does that still exist in our world? Yes. But not like it did, and certainly not on some of the college campuses where it should be. Mm.
Yeah, I'm thinking about when I went to college, and I went to a Christian college, mm-hmm. but as you know.
Yeah, since I helped pay a little. Huh?
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The listeners might not know. So I went to a Christian college, but in several ways, it was one of the first times that my Christian worldview, ironically, at a Christian campus, was exposed to ideas I hadn't heard, like growing up in the church, like, why should we actually trust the Bible? Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Never learned about that in Sunday school. And so me and many of my peers, for the first time, we're hearing the other side of it.
Here's the question. Were they presenting a balanced view of both sides or not?
No. But before we get to that part, there was the need, because we didn't have that, and it was the first time for a lot of people, it was difficult. And for me, for a period of time, it was difficult to balance, but this is what I've been taught my whole life growing up, but now this is what I'm hearing, but it was kept from me. What do I actually believe? So I believe it's a further testament to the need to understand other people's perspectives and worldview, so that you have a reason for why you believe what you believe. Now, in that specific situation, you know, there was a particular teacher who did he did a very good job at ripping the Bible apart and did a very poor job at helping understand why it's still believable, why it's still true and inerrant, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. with all of the known issues that might be with it. So anyway, I had friends leave, entering into Bible college as Bible majors and leaving as atheists, and sometimes still Bible majors. that are now atheist. And you see, and those are the people who are going to go, I don't know what they're going to do, but they, I don't even know where I'm going with that.
And if I'm hearing what you're saying, though, it wasn't just exposing to new thoughts. It was not giving a balanced view of opposing thoughts.
Yeah.
Which would make all the difference in the world. Okay, here are the reasons that you would think this, but here are the reasons you would also think this. Now, let's start evaluating each of these one, and see
logically.
And see what they could come to, what makes sense, et cetera.
Because that's what we do in research.
Absolutely.
You also have to look at the results that come back inconclusive, or the ones that come back against the hypothesis where the null is true. And you have to ask yourself why, and then go through and logically begin to deduce. But we don't do that on a large scale.
And if a researcher spins that, then they are anathema to other researchers. They're worse than plagiarist. In the sense right. that what they have done is they've taken data that indicated one thing and spun it to make it appear to say something totally different as to what they wanted it to say.
Right. Well, and that's the intention of the peer review process, so that things like that don't happen.
Or get caught when they do.
Or to get caught when they do, because for the most part, research takes... It doesn't take lightly the fact that this is a type of truth that we are putting out in the world. It needs to be reliable and valid.
Mm-hmm. And in good research, you'll actually have a section about here are the flaws in my research.
Right.
Here are the weaknesses in my research.
Right. You have to critically think about your own beliefs
exactly.
with it.
And so intellectual, the changes I have seen has to do with people thinking less and being programmed more. And I'm talking about across the board, no matter what their educational level might be. There are PhDs just as programmed as there are people who never finish the first grade and programmed to believe what they believe.
By what? What's programming them?
By whoever or whatever is important to them. Whoever or whatever is important to them has a tremendous influence over what they believe. And then that determines their value system. And so when we look at that, you say, well, wasn't all of these things, Dr. Beam, don't you think that all of those things were still problems back when you were young? Yeah. But they're more intense now.
You think it's because of media and social media?
Definitely social media, without a doubt. And media as well. I think we've come to learn that the fair and balanced reporting of Walter Cronkite on the Vietnam War on CBS Evening News back in the 1950s and 60s, we trusted him. He was like one of the most trusted men in America because he would give both sides. And first he'd just present the news without comment. And then he'd say, okay, let me give you my comments. And he would give the weaknesses and strengths of that. And so America trusted him. It's like, first you gave the news without bias. Now you're giving us what you think that means and letting us know there's two sides to it. That stopped a long time ago. And I know from experience, having been interviewed occasionally or recording to be aired on television, that based on the bias of the person who's doing the interviewing and the bias of the editor, I've actually watched myself on television say things I did not believe because they cut and splice things in such a way. Not like they cut my picture to another picture, but they'd play a phrase for me, then they'd cut over and say something and then play another phrase for me. And the conclusion was, good grief, does he really believe that? And I'm looking at it going, no, he doesn't believe that. You have mistreated me. You have slanted it to say what you wanted to say. And then when you get to social media, oh my goodness, everybody, if they have any access to the internet at all, can say anything they want to say. And it's just fascinating that the satire people will put out there just because they know people will believe it. Something about this country music singer won't sing at that country music club because of this great difference they have about God or about politics or about whatever. And none of it's true. And people pick up on that, and all of a sudden you see it all over the internet everywhere that these two guys are fighting with each other when it was all made up by somebody who just posted it on the internet. And people who was on the internet, it must be true. And man, it's the greatest disseminator of misinformation, bias, and outright hatred that's occurred in my lifetime. And when this AI stuff gets going, I don't know what's going to happen. I fear it's going to get worse.
I know. I just saw one of my friends is kind of like a pioneer in AI information, and he was sharing a couple weeks ago now that the video part is coming, and it's, you will not know what's real and what's not.
I believe that.
And it's terrifying. It's weird. I don't like it, but I've always been a late adopter to all technology. I wish we didn't have social media.
We used to call those Luddites.
That's probably me. I would rather not have Wi-Fi, not have social media, definitely not have AI, because it takes the human element out of care. Actually, there's a lot of things out there that are therapy type services, like subscription services. And one of the concerns is that they're going to start using AI for the counseling or coaching, which actually is the worst thing that can happen for an individual.
Oh, wow.
Although people will say, like the people at those companies will say that the end client's going to feel taken care of, but the whole point of like coaching, counseling, if we go back to Carl Rogers, who was the pioneer in that, really in the talk therapy area, it was so that a person can feel that they're cared for by another human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Positive human regard. Yeah.
And now we're going to turn that into
a machine.
For what? For profit margins. Surely, like that has to be the reason.
Well, if you put all that together, the intellectual changes that I've seen, where now it is, people don't strive as much to be honest. Now, some people do. I'm not trying to condemn the whole world, but many more people are no longer striving for honesty. Intellectually, they want to prove what they want it to be, period. And then emotionally, it's like my emotions, what I feel is more important than anything else, including responsibility, your needs, your wants. And then spiritually, with many, even those who are professing a religion of a particular kind, whether they're Muslim or Buddhist or Jewish or Christian, I'm only talking about Christians because that's the one I'm familiar with. God has changed from, this is the God of the Bible, look what he's like, to, this is what God's like. And what he's like is this being I've developed up here that I like, and that's God. Mm. So I see phrases that I think are true, such things as this. If your God is happy with everything you want to do, your God is you. Mm. And I think that's happened, that people have made themselves their gods while still claiming they believe in a God or the God. But the A God or the God that they believe in is not the one that we've been presented that has righteousness and morality and good and what must be done and true love and all those things changed over to, no, God is the one who endorses everything I think, everything I want to do. And then physically, people continue to change. Obviously, people are living a little bit longer because of medicine and things like that. But and this is where I'm going to sound like a really old fogey. The reason that men went to strip clubs back in the 50s and 60s. Now, I was too young to go to a strip club in the 50s, so that wasn't me. But the men that went, reason men went there was because men have always been intrigued by female bodies. And the strippers would carefully and in sexual ways, through dance and movement, reveal more and more of their body. And the more they revealed, the more tips they got, the more money they made, and all those kinds of things. And everybody understood that back then, men are attracted to female bodies. Now, if a girl is wearing hardly anything, and the guy looks at her twice because she's revealed so much of her body, he's the bad guy. Mm. It's like, how dare you look at her like that? It's been a principle of humankind back to Adam and Eve. It's why men still go to strip clubs, although I don't think they have as much reason to go now. Go downtown Nashville when they're having bachelorette parties on a Saturday night, and you'll see more skin than anything you could imagine. And it's like, don't you dare look at me. What are you, some kind of a sexist pig? So even physically, the way we dress ourselves, the way we perform, the way we carry ourselves. All those kinds of things change from humility, from confidence, which is always good, to look at me, look at me. How dare you look at me? Mm. And so I've seen changes in all of the pies all the way through.
I think there's a difference that needs to be pointed out here, too. There's a difference in what you're saying of people dressing modestly versus if people dress a certain way, then, and if a man were to make a move or anything like that, that the woman asked for it.
No, I'm not
which
saying
is not
that.
What
no,
you're
no,
saying.
No, no, no. I'm talking about just
make sure,
noticing, just looking.
For sure. I just want to make sure I can already see listeners and saying like, wait a minute, he just said, but it's not what you're saying.
No, no, not at all. Not at all. I remember once trying to help a teenage girl deal with the sexual abuse that had occurred to her from her stepfather when she was like 15. Mm. And she was saying, well, it was all my fault. I walked through the living room wearing a bikini, so I asked for it. And I stopped right there and I said, who is programming you?
Mm-hmm.
Look, was that the smartest thing to do? Well, with that guy, obviously not. But you weren't asking for it.
Right.
And if some man hurts you, molests you, makes moves on you, whatever, then you have every right to be offended and to tell him to get lost and go away. So thank you for clarifying that. I'm just talking about the fact that people can dress however they want now.
Mm.
And then if anybody even looks at them,
right,
you're the bad guy.
There's no personal responsibility even for how we show
there
up.
There you go.
Physically.
I'm
yeah.
glad you straightened that out. Yeah, I could see the letters coming down.
Well, I'm sure you remember when I was growing up, you had to approve my swimsuits up until pretty much I got married.
Yep. And I transferred that to Rob.
I guess, although we went to the Philippines and Korea one time and there was a picture of me in a swimsuit and you commented and you were like, I don't remember your comment, but you were not approving of my swimsuit as a married woman on a vacation with my husband.
Well, I think fathers always feel very protective of their daughters.
Well,
at least they should.
And that was it. Because I would say, like, my shorts had to be a certain length and, you know, all of the things. And when I would get frustrated about it, you would say, I'm so sorry that those other girls don't have dads who love them as much as I love you. It's 100% what you... And now I feel it. Because when Eliana...
Your daughter.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, she's definitely in a phase of wearing very baggy clothes right now. But I can only imagine as she gets older and she has the most beautiful legs, like long, slender... And I'm like, it's going to be hard for her to find long shorts because she has such long legs. But I can already see it. When she's 16, I'm going to be like, better cover those things up.
Yep. Yep. I'm never justifying anything anyone does to a woman at all, period. No. If that's bad. Mm-hmm. No, never, never. But to dress provocatively and then call me a name because I turn and look at you, it's just not rational.
Yeah. But it's the way the world is programmed right now, which is get more likes, get more views, get more attention. Like, that's what people seem to be chasing.
It's all about me.
Yeah.
And you better like it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like it. You better endorse what I think, feel, believe, or do. If you don't, you're the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But what if my morals just don't encompass something that you're doing? You better change your morals because I'm the center now. You have the center, not sinner, center. And therefore, whatever makes me happy, you have to be in favor of and actually promote. And the world's becoming more and more confused every day.
So what would you do if you were 25 right now?
I'd be very happy. It's hard to remember the world when I was 25 because that was a long time ago. But I think I would do what I'm seeing Dr. Phil do now. I've not ever seen a full Dr. Phil program. And the little pieces I saw, I wasn't much of a fan.
Right.
But now he's decided to stand up and talk about how in the world can you endorse and actually do surgery on a little child who's not even mature enough to make decisions yet to change his or her, to allegedly change his or her gender. And he's standing up to that. And how can you have these children coming into the world through our borders that are being, all these terrible things are going to happen for them. I really like the fact, I've never met him, I'd like to someday, I like the fact that somebody with some visibility is standing up and saying, look, quit the insanity. You don't change the gender of a 5-year-old or 8-year-old or 12-year-old. They're not even old enough to understand what they want yet. You don't do this. You don't do that. You don't do the other. And not doing it with animosity, not doing it with hatred. And if a child has had that surgery, be as gentle and kind and tender and loving to that child as possible. I'm not against mistreating anybody. I'm not for mistreating anybody. But the world. If I were 25, I'd become an activist, but not the kind that you're seeing on TV now. This activist would be toward morality, toward what true love really is. True love is not letting the other person do whatever they want to do. True love, my 2-year-old's got a fork. He's going to stick it in that plug over the electric himself. True love says, let him learn for himself. That's not true love. Mm. True love is trying to guide people away from where you know the harm is. And teaching, and talking, and interacting. It was not perfect in the world I grew up in. It was still bad then, but I think it's worse now than it's ever been.
Mm. What does it look like to truly love and show respect towards someone when you don't agree, but you want to love them?
I think you treat them with value. Like, I'm not more important than you. You're just as important as I. You have value. And I will accept the way you think, you feel, you believe, even if I don't endorse it. Like, okay, I understand that's what you believe, but that's not what I believe. I don't have to endorse it, but I accept the fact that you believe it, but I don't have to change my beliefs. Mm. Or I don't have to encourage it, like, good for you, keep going. Now, keep changing in those kinds of ways. I'm not going to endorse anything that I think is not right. I'm not going to encourage anything that I think is not right. But can I still love and treat with genuine respect a person into those things? Absolutely. Absolutely. And still be a Christian who believes in right and wrong. Mm. Look at the people who hung out with Jesus. They were the ones everybody else treated terribly.
Yeah.
Why did they come to him? Because he thought he endorsed the bad things they were doing? No. They hung out with him because he treated them with love and respect. Mm. I think that's the answer. And it sounds too Pollyannish, but somebody somewhere, Kimberly, and you're one of those, has to stand up and say, this is what's right. We don't hate you, but we won't give up on believing the difference between right and wrong, sanity and insanity. I don't mean in the psychological terms, but in the terms of how people are acting. And if we get enough people doing that, then the world will change. Again, in a better way. Gandhi had the right idea. He accomplished a lot. King, Martin Luther King Jr. had the right idea. He accomplished a lot. And a lot of people followed them. Oh, God, raise us up those leaders, men and women, who can put us into a situation of life of understanding that physically we need to take care of ourselves and yet at the same time not be trying to show ourselves off in an immoral way, intellectually, that we needed to give and take, to listen, to understand, to be willing to modify, emotionally, to, yes, my emotions do count. They really do matter. But so do the emotions of other people. Mm. And so sometimes I'm going to do the right thing, even when it's not the thing I want to do. And spiritually, to stop making our own gods and to accept the God that actually exists. I mean, we want him to accept us. I think he's got to be in heaven saying, when are you going to accept me?
Mm. Wow. I think that was, I don't know how to end it from there because I believe that was a powerful ending. Thank you for sharing your wisdom.
Always thank you for having me on these programs. I appreciate that. I don't know how much longer I'll live, but I always love working with you every time I get a chance.
I love working with you as well. It's definitely a different topic matter that I haven't covered before, but it's one I believe is important. Mm-hmm. And with your perspective of what you have lived through and the wisdom you have to foresee where you believe things are headed, I think it's a poignant.
So do your viewers and listeners make comments and things like that?
They can now. So we have a YouTube channel.
Huh.
And they leave comments on videos. So we would love for our listeners to leave a comment on this one.
I would love to see their comments.
Absolutely. Tell us what your takeaways were from today's episode, your questions, the further questions that you have.
Even if you disagree, but be nice.
Yeah. Be nice. That's the point. Treat us with respect as we will treat you with respect as well. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
We covered a lot in today's episode, and I loved the conversation. I believe that there is a lot of wisdom that should and can be gained from listening to the older generations who have gone before us, who have experienced life. And it's actually one of the crazy things about the American culture and more of the Western cultures is that we tend to value younger voices and not really the voices of the elders, which is very common in more of the Asian cultures. That's one of the things that I've noticed, even in the podcast interviews I've done. So many times when I've interviewed people who have so much life experience, the wisdom that they can bring to the conversation is amazing. And I hope that you had some wisdom and key takeaways that you were able to take from today's episode. And I'm going to share with you some of mine. The first key takeaway is how we have definitely entered into a world of what is in it for me. The society that we live in, the culture that we live in, the ways that we are told to succeed in life are very selfish and self-focused. And I am just as guilty of this as any other person. It's easy to get caught in the rat race of wanting likes, wanting followers, wanting growth, all of those things. And it's not that those things are bad, but it's when we put those things in our own image and our own wants, needs, and desires above that of others that we begin to see hurt and pain and relationships dissolve and all of the consequences that come with that. So the first key takeaway for today is maybe to ask yourself, as I know I will, where are the areas in my life in which I've put myself first? That's kind of interesting because this whole podcast of It Starts With Attraction is about how we can focus on ourselves and become the best that we can be. But I hope what you understand is we never want to come at that in a selfish way. We don't want to focus on ourselves to the detriment of those that we love in our lives. The goal is to focus on becoming our best selves for the edification and the continued success and satisfaction of the relationships in our life, not the other way around. So maybe you need to ask yourself again, as I know I do as well, what are some things that may need to change in your mental beliefs or in your daily actions that are showing the people in your life that maybe you're valuing yourself and your time more than you're valuing them. Another key takeaway that I had from today's episode is that it is important to be a person who has strong beliefs, but also a strong respect for people who differ from your beliefs. In fact, I want to challenge you to find someone who is across the party line from you and have a deep, honest conversation where you listen more than you speak, especially in this season of politics that we're entering into in America. This is going to be a great opportunity for you to exercise that muscle of how to show other people respect, even when you disagree. And it's also a great opportunity to remember that politics are not the end all be all. My belief system very much says that it really doesn't matter as much who is in office as much as it matters who I put my faith in. And that's Jesus, not a president of the United States or any other person. We can lose sight of that in the middle of these election seasons. And I encourage you to find what really matters and to encourage and to prioritize relationships with others, even those you disagree with, over being right or wanting to win. And my third and final takeaway from the whole episode is that really at the end of the day, cultures change. Things happen. We see this not just in the past couple of decades, but over centuries, over millennia. There's been a ton of advances and changes in human culture. And there's also been a lot of things that stay the same. There are always people who need help. There are always people who are ostracized, who are outcasts, who get looked over because maybe they don't fit in with everyone else. The key to really making a difference anywhere in the world, as cliche as it sounds, is to love others. To love others by helping to meet the needs that they have, physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. So how can you show love to your neighbor or to your enemy starting today? I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you found it valuable, I hope that you share it with a friend and maybe it gets some conversations started that need to happen to rejuvenate relationships in your life. As always, please leave a review. It helps us to reach even more people. And if you would, wherever you're listening to this podcast, especially on Apple, go ahead and hit that follow button, even on Spotify. It helps that algorithm to help us reach even more people. Until next week, stay strong.